Welcome to Dig Deep, the mining podcast. In this podcast, we go deep into mining news, hot topics, and live interviews with mining professionals and leading figures in the mining industry. Introducing your host, Rob Tyson, founder and director of Mining International and Mining International Executive, a leading global mining recruitment and headhunting agency.
Hi, mining community. Welcome back to another episode of the Dig Deep, the Mining Podcast. And today we have a returning guest who appeared back in June 2022. So that's nearly 2 years ago. Episode 246. So we've got Jonathan Howard, who is the president and CEO of Dakota Gold Corp, who are listed on the New York Stock Exchange. They're a junior mining gold exploration development company with a specific focus on revitalizing the home state district in Lead, South Dakota. John has spent over 15 years raising finance for various junior mining resources companies, focusing on institutional accounts, high net worth and family offices, and has raised over $600 million for public and private companies in the natural resources sector during that period. So today he's going to obviously give us an update on Dakota Gold since we last spoke, what the future holds for them. And yeah, we'll talk about the projects and whatever's happened in the last 2 years. So that's welcome, Jonathan, to the podcast. How are you doing, Jonathan?
Rob, thank you so much for having me back on the show. It's great to be here.
Yeah, appreciate your support and obviously coming back on the show. So for those that didn't listen to the previous episode, appreciate if you could go back and have a listen after you listen to this. But for those that hadn't listened, wonder if you can just give us a snapshot or an overview of yourself and your career.
Sure, and it's hard to believe it, you know, in June of 22, I was on your podcast. So time flies. Yeah, my background is capital markets and finance, and I co-founded a company in 2010 called Gold Standard Ventures, which I was CEO of, and it was acquired by Orla Mining, and they're building the railroad project in the southern portion of the Carlin Trend, and looking at sort of applying a similar template to what we're doing with Dakota Gold. Bob Quartermain and I, who's the co-chair and largest shareholder, my business partner, we looked at this district and saw an opportunity to really roll it up and consolidate it and be first mover. And we merged with a public company called Dakota Territory Resource Corp. And we've grown the land package from 5,000 acres to 50,000 acres. And actually, since, you know, I was on your podcast in June of 22, what we were looking at doing is we're looking at making a discovery in Homestake Formation. So our Maitland project is contiguous with the old Homestake mine, which still to this day is America's single largest gold mine. So we've made two discoveries at Maitland, which is on private ground, and that's where our four rigs are right now. And in our last press release, we talk about the discovery we've made is akin to the Western Ledge system in the old mine. So what does that mean? 17, 19, and 21 made up the Western Ledge system in the old Homestake mine. And that had an endowment of over 6 million ounces of gold at between 8 and 9 grams. And so we looked at all of the data from 17, 19, and 21 ledge, which make up the Western Ledge system of the old Homestake mine, analyzed over 500 drill holes, looked at the average grade, true thickness, and that's what we're hitting. And we've had really, really high grade hits. We had two press releases ago, we hit 4.87 ounces per ton. We've had many half ounce, 1 ounce intercepts. And again, this is just when I was on your show in June of 22, we were looking to have a proof of concept. You know, we knew that there was mineralized Homestake formation along this structural corridor coming out of the old mine because there was data from Homestake. There were historical drill holes. So we knew we had a good place to start. And so the first discovery we made, which we call the JB zone in Homestake formation, But we've also found a completely new type of mineralization on the project, which is what we call Unionville. We had some holes that we announced yesterday. And this is basically an overprint on top of the Homestake formation. So with every drill hole we drill at Maitland, we have an opportunity to hit both kinds of mineralization. So you kind of get two for one, which is great. And it's a long structure. You know, we can kind of see it easily being over 2 miles long. And it's good grade. We had a hole that was 15 meters of 4 grams. Not as high grade as what you see in the Homestake formation, but that could definitely pay for a lot of your development to get underground. So really encouraging to see that. And then at our Richmond Hill project, which is 1 mile to the west of Maitland on private ground, past producing mine, and also 1 mile to the north of the state's only producing gold mine, which is Wharf, which belongs to Coeur Mining. And that produces about 85,000 to 90,000 ounces a year. It's oxide, it's heap leach. And we're coming out with a maiden resource for our Richmond Hill project next month. So we will have compiled 800 historical drill holes, and we've drilled 78 holes ourselves, where about 20 of 25 holes that we've drilled are outside of the resource. So because we had a cutoff for data coming into that. So we're going to host a conference call, and we'll outline and convey to the market what the resource is all about, opportunities for it to expand and get bigger. But I think the important metrics and numbers to look at will be the oxide, the grade of the oxide, and strip of the oxide. So really interesting. And some of the holes we've hit underneath the oxide, we think there's some kind of a feeder and plumbing system underneath there. That's really why we picked up the Richmond Hill project, because something was driving that shallow oxide mineralization. And again, both Richmond Hill and Maitland are on private ground. And we've kind of connected a lot of the land in between the two through a number of private acquisitions that we've done. And it's really exciting. So we've got our plate full. It looks like we've got, we're coming into a better market. And Fed Chairman Powell yesterday made some statements that were a bit dovish instead of his normally hawkish tone. So committing to kind of three interest rate cuts this year. So I think if we're starting this next move up from a 2150, 2100 level, even though it's higher today, it could be very good for gold. And it's one of the last sectors that has a lot of deep value. And to still have modest inflows where gold is flirting with 2200 is remarkable to me. So it's actually at historic lows in terms of this disconnect between gold price and equities. But I think that will change once there's this clear Fed pivot. So maybe I'll pause there, Rob, and see if you've got any questions or comments.
Yeah, certainly. What I suppose I was going to do is ask, obviously, so the audience is a little bit more aware of, obviously, the projects. I wonder if you just tell us a little bit more about the Homestake District. And I suppose also what drew you to the area, to the region?
Sure. Great question. So the Homestake mine was in production from 1876 to 2001. 40 million ounces of gold. Almost 9 grams was mined. So it's the largest BIF, the largest banded iron formation hosted deposit in the world. And when Barrick acquired Homestake in 2001, they didn't acquire Homestake for South Dakota. In fact, the decision was already made to shut the mine down. So Dakota Gold Corp would be the third company born out of Barrick's closure group under the Mark Bristow-led Barrick era. Where the other two companies born out of Barrick's closure group would be K92, which has a really robust, really exciting mine in Papua New Guinea that's growing, that's got a massive endowment. And then the Skeena Resources, which is flirting with a $1 billion company, 5.5 to 6 million ounces and growing, will be easily a 300,000 ounce a year producer. And then there's Dakota Gold Corp. So what we saw was an opportunity to really be first mover and to acquire these assets out of Barrick's closure group and We got all of the historic data, which had never been digitized. It was all in analog, all in paper boxes. And we took 18 months to digitize everything. And that really led and drove this consolidation opportunity, going from 5,000 acres to 50,000 acres. And it really importantly informed our exploration program, because when Homestake would venture outside of the old mine, the cutoff was 7 grams. So there's a lot of material that's 4 grams, 5 grams, 6 grams. And the way these ledge systems worked in the old mine, you had these tails that were often at 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 grams. And then in our press release, we talk about these centroids of the ledge systems, which are the thicker portions of these ledges. And that's typically where you get also your better grades. So we saw an opportunity to discover a new ledge system at Maitland, contiguous with a 40 million ounce ore body, a generational ore body. And we have gone now beyond proof of concept, made two discoveries at Maitland. And then in this Unionville discovery, we've got these sub-parallel zones that we've got a few drill holes into that have really good grade and thickness. We need to get a few more holes into them to call them discoveries. But this is a large, like one of the largest concentrations of gold anywhere on the planet. And for us, it was there for the taking, because it was kind of a district that was left for dead. It was seen to be a mature, tired district. But coming from that gold standard background, understanding permitting within the US, we've really tried to maximize everything we're doing on private ground. So from a permitting standpoint, one of the challenges that we face, or any company in the US faces, is can you permit this? If you're a single asset company like us, that's reliant on capital markets to live, if you're going to take 3 years to 5 years to permit something, that's tough. Whereas if you're Barrick or Newmont or Agnico, Kinross, and you're permitting two or three things, and maybe it takes an extra year or two, it doesn't matter, because it's not necessarily material. Whereas for us, telling the market that it's going to take 5 to 7 years, that's a really tough business model. But whereas private ground is typically a 1 to 2 year process, that's bite-sized, that's manageable. So we've really tried to leverage, the private land aspect of this company, and use that as a platform to be able to move this thing forward with a cadence and a sense of urgency, which is what Quartermain did at Pretium. From IPO and discovery to economics, permitting, mine finance, and first gold pour in under 7 years. It's unheard of. So, I think that's what we are looking at doing here. And really, part of the opportunity that Quartermain and I saw was to partner with the local expertise, technical expertise, the Dakota Territory Resource Corp had, led by Jerry Averly. He was the last mine manager when the mine shut down. I think third generation miner. James Berry, our vice president of exploration. James worked for Homestake, was a part of the team that made the North Drift discovery that Homestake had made on the Maitland project. Also worked as a mine geologist for Wharf Resources, so he's worked at Wharf. So he understands both tertiary and Homestake formation. So both styles, and I have to give him full credit for really being open to that tertiary unit being mineralized, because sometimes geologists get a little too cute, or too kind of tunnel vision and myopic in their thinking, and they miss opportunities around them. But I mean, the best place to look for a gold mine is next to a gold mine, and in the shadow of the headprint. So, catalyst rich year for us. We've got this resource coming out at Richmond Hill next month, and we've chosen to move the all of the rigs to Maitland, because we had 2 rigs at Maitland and 2 rigs at Richmond Hill. But now that the work is done for that resource, we're going to really focus on establishing some dimensions in the two discoveries we have at Maitland. We love what we're seeing geologically, and we've been able to really lower our drilling costs, and improve our productivity. So full credit to the team in collaborating with Hi-Tech, our drilling company, that's been great to work with. And you know, coming into a much more interesting time in the gold market. You know, it's been a real challenge. You know, and you wouldn't think that with gold being $2,000, $2,100, $1,900, but there's been general margin erosion prior to this move in the gold price. So this $150 move in the gold price, that's 100% free cash flow generation for these miners, which is great, and the industry needs that. So I'm quite constructive on you know, the gold markets, and really excited about what we're building here at Dakota Gold Corp.
Looking at your most recent presentation, it says the area is obviously underexplored. Why do you think it is still unexplored?
Yeah, so great question again. So when Homestake acquired, or when Barrick acquired Homestake, it went into their closure group for 20 years. So Barrick again did not buy Homestake for South Dakota. So it was in the closure group, and there was no exploration work being done. They didn't even do DD, you know, geological DD on Homestake. They did environmental and bonding and you know, DD. And so it was quite cut up and fragmented. And we want to have district scale opportunity. And we think that the right kind of M&A and consolidation in the mining industry is needed. Where if you looked at a camp, let's say that camp is 25 square miles, and there's five companies that own that 25 square miles, there should be one company, you know, one G&A. And then you can clearly pass those synergies and look at ways to optimize the asset. There's too many companies in the mining industry. There needs to be a, you know, the right kind of consolidation, and we saw that opportunity for
What type of mineralization are you looking for? And is it only Homestake mineralization that you're discovering?
So the primary expert, the primary geology we're looking for is Homestake formation at Maitland. So we've made that discovery. We don't know yet whether we have one zone or two zones, one ledge, two ledges, because we have an upper zone or a lower zone. We don't know yet whether they connect or whether they're two distinct gold zones. So that was real proof of concept. But I mean, these are some of the largest and highest concentrations of like tons per vertical foot. That's one of the things that the Homestake mine was known for. And they have these long strike extent and vertical extents to them. And we're just sort of scratching the surface here. And again, because we've consolidated this whole land package, now this tertiary, which is very shallow, so we can hammer holes into that a lot quicker than the deeper Homestake formation. So it's both tertiary epithermal mineralization, which is the overprint of the Homestake formation, and then Homestake formation. And then at Richmond Hill is turning out to really sort of exceed our expectations for what's there and how I hate to sound like a promoter, but how big that mineral system is. And there was a real focus historically on shallow, you know, 100 meter holes, maybe 150 meter holes with RC drilling into the oxide. And so we drilled some holes. We had a, you know, 300 meters of a gram. We've had 30 meters of 6 grams. So there is high grade there. And it's totally open. And I think just taking the time to consolidate all of the work, rebuild the geological model. And that's, I think, to me and you know, and to our team, that one of the things that's been so exciting and encouraging is that geological model is working. So now in our belief is that we're going to have a higher, you know, hit rate and be able to put tons on the table quicker and more efficiently. And you know, so that's something that's really exciting. But that's really the work that James Berry has led, supported by Mike Terry, who's a PhD, who's used to work in the old mine, Bill Galen, and Jerry Aberle. It's a great technical team, So it's, you kind of have three opportunities. You've got this tertiary and the homestead formation at Maitland, and then you've got this shallow oxide, but then you've got this sulfide underneath it. Now, we did also make a rare earth discovery at Richmond Hill that we announced last month. And to be honest, Rob, the market didn't like it. We actually went down that day. We had some shareholders that said, what are you turkeys doing? This is a distraction. Stop. Because in our press release, we talk about, you know, could this improve or enhance our permitting timelines? You know, could this enhance project economics? Could this cast a bigger net of investors that would look at Dakota Gold? But it, most importantly, in the short term, there are a number of DOD and DOE grants, so Department of Energy and Department of Defense, where the U.S. federal government is looking to support and provide funding to foster and develop domestic critical metals. And so we have applied for a few of those grants. We'll see what, you know, happens there. If we are successful in receiving some of that grant money, that is the money we will use towards advancing the critical metals opportunity. And if we are fortunate to get that money, we would have to do additional drilling. So you have to drill through the oxide to get to the mix, to get to the sulfide, and the rare earths are associated with the sulfides. So for the critical metals, as you know, it's all about processing metallurgy. So that's, I think, why some of our shareholders were a little bit concerned. Well, is this going to be a distraction? No, it is not. We are a gold company. There is a really interesting silver byproduct at Richmond Hill that will not make it into this resource. But it just shows there's a lot of metal there. It's a vibrant system, and it's largely been untested.
How close together are your projects? And I suppose, is there any potential synergies for future development between obviously all the projects?
Absolutely. So, you know, Maitland and Richmond Hill are only 1 mile apart from each other. So, and we've kind of filled in a lot of that ground. You know, it's one of the really amazing things about the relationships that Jerry Aberle and Ron Everett, who works for us, who's actually the local mayor, Steve O'Rourke, our other co-chair, you know, they know a lot of these people. So we were buying lots, we were buying land, buying ranches, because that private ground from a development standpoint, you have to have that platform or it's going to be really challenging. So we've kind of filled in almost all the gap from Richmond Hill to Maitland. So there's absolutely synergies that would exist between those two projects. And clearly, there would be synergies that would exist between Richmond Hill and the producing Wharf mine that's 1 mile to the south.
Just wondering also if you can just tell us, obviously you mentioned a few people within the team. Wonder if you can just tell us a little bit about the management team.
Sure. So the company is led by our co-chairs, Steve O'Rourke, who was former head of global exploration for BHP. He's a South Dakota School of Mines grad, lives in South Dakota. He's been a phenomenal resource for us. And then Bob Quartermain, who's a mining legend, mining hall of fame, grew Silver Standard from 2.5 million to 2.5 billion, founded Pretium, and, you know, discovery to Goldport under 7 years, mining hall of fame, actually in June of 2022, shortly after I came on the podcast, maybe it was July. And then, you know, so myself, president, CEO, one of the co-founders, you know, Jerry Aberle, COO, last mine manager for Homestake, James Berry, vice president of exploration, relevant, experience in the old mine and at Wharf Resources. We brought on Patrick Malone from Barrick who was running their closure group. He's our chief sustainability officer. And management owns almost 25%. So we've got skin in the game. We've got millions of dollars of our own money into the deal. Quartermain does not draw a salary. And what he would receive as compensation for being non-exec chair, he actually, we donate that to a number of our local ESG initiatives. So he is 100% aligned with our shareholders. And I think that's what, one of the things that separates this group apart from others is that alignment, is that skin in the game. We've got a strong, you know, share position, and we're focused. We don't want to go into other states. We feel that our ability to compete and deliver outlandish returns is in the home state district. If we start going out of state or country, really would dilute that focus and that expertise that we feel we have.
You mentioned, obviously, you got a number of ESG initiatives. I just wonder if you can obviously share some of them with us, and obviously how that's helping the local community.
Sure. I mean, just case in point. So our permitting takes 30 days. And there are homes in the area, and we have had virtually no complaints. And I say virtually because we did have one complaint, and it was an older couple that thought we were fracking. But when we took the time to educate them as to what we were doing, they've been completely supportive. And again, a lot of that is because of the relationships that Jerry Aberley and Ron Everett and our team have locally within the district. And so, you know, a lot of our team grew up in the area, born and raised, went to South Dakota School of Mines, worked for Homestake. They live here. So we've recognized very early on that if we didn't have a strong social presence, we would not get a license to operate. So some of the initiatives we sponsor, the South Dakota School of Mines, we've got an internship program. We sponsor the Caterpillar Mining Hub in the old mine at the 1700 foot level. We're looking at a number of reforestation opportunities and carbon credit, carbon offset. We have a quarterly town hall where we host whoever wants to come from the local community. We're very active, and I think that translates into, you know, the DANR, which is the Department of Natural Resources within South Dakota, and that's responsible for who's issuing our permits. And I think because of the work that we do, and this is a stat that I learned recently. So since I was on your podcast, our net disturbance is 16 acres, 1/6. So we are reclaiming as we go along, and our whole philosophy has been to repurpose already disturbed land and leave it better than when we got it. And I think that is just in our DNA. So when you get some of these state agencies that come in, it's very hard for them to criticize. Again, we're always open to improving and learning and growing, but we collaborate with them, and we've helped with you know, kind of educating some of their, you know, newer hires. But I think the mining industry has a very bad reputation, and you get some companies that will go into a community where they have no local ties, where they're not from there, and they just say, and they kind of dictate. That doesn't work. And, you know, a lot of the, you know, chatter out there, you know, that's kind of what happened in Panama with First Quantum. You have to have that local buy-in. You have to have strong employment locally, which we do. I mean, we've got 36 full-time employees in our office in Leeds, South Dakota. That's where our head office is. And I think 34 are from South Dakota. And the two that weren't born there consider South Dakota their home.
That's good to hear. And lastly, just wondering if you can tell us the outlook for the remainder of the year, and if there's anything else that you would like to add and let our audience know about.
Yeah, so catalyst and what to expect for the rest of the year. We are hosting a conference call in April to release our maiden resource from Richmond Hill. So that will compile 800 historical drill holes and about 54, 55 that we've drilled on our own. And that's April. We'll host a conference call. I would highly encourage anyone that would like to hear more about it. If not, management's more than happy to facilitate one-on-one calls and continue drill results with these four rigs operating at Maitland. As we get into the summer, into the fall, we might move one or two of those rigs back to Richmond Hill and maybe even look at adding a fifth rig. We won't have a maiden resource for, at Maitland this year, but people will have a higher level of comfort looking at the two discoveries we have at Maitland and saying, all right, these are the dimensions. We can kind of see a target of X or, this kind of potential. And again, I think finally, this gold market is turning. And it's been very frustrating for the generalist investor because you've had so many false starts in the last 5, 6 years. And I'm not saying this time is different. I mean, history never repeats itself, but it often rhymes. But you've got the U.S. is running $2.5 trillion deficits annually. They're spending almost $1 trillion on defense and almost $1 trillion to service your debt. That is not sustainable. So at some point, that's not going to work out well. However, the U.S. is the most resilient, most innovative country and economy in the world. But you're also seeing this de-dollarization happen, where you're seeing a number of countries that don't want to settle transactions and trade in U.S. dollars. But I still think the U.S. dollar will be the world's reserve currency for decades to come. But you will see like a gradual erosion, maybe 0.5%, 1%, 2% every year, where the U.S. dollar is slightly less relevant. And then lastly, you're seeing a massive shift from ownership of gold from west to the east. So Middle Eastern, Southeast Asia, Asian countries, are physical demand has never been higher. And they're taking physical delivery in their own country. They don't want to store it anywhere else out of fear of maybe not agreeing with foreign policy of certain countries that are in the G7 and then having that gold confiscated. So I think it's a really exciting time. It's a pretty crazy time, but it's super exciting for our industry. So I'm cautiously optimistic, but I think this is the platform is there. And again, as I said earlier, if we're starting this next leg higher into this Fed pivot at these gold prices, it's super interesting.
Certainly is. Jonathan, really appreciate your time. Thank you for coming on again, talking to us about Dakota Gold. And obviously, you've made a lot of progress since we last spoke nearly 2 years ago. And obviously, wish you well for the remainder of the year. And perhaps come on instead of nearly 2 years, come on next early part of next year and give us an update on what progress you've made from then till then.
That'd be great, and really appreciate it. I know that you're a busy guy and you've got lots of requests. So really appreciate the platform and the forum to talk about Dakota Gold and the gold market. And would love to come back on at some point in the future. And just lastly, I think everything we set out to do when I was on your podcast in 2022, we've accomplished. So it's now gone past proof of concept to how big is this system.
Jonathan, if our audience wants to reach out to you, if they want to know more about the company, look at the progress that you're going to make, how can they go about doing that? What social media platform channels are you on?
Yeah, so we are on LinkedIn. We are on Instagram. All of my contact information is on our website. So my email is jodd@dakotagoldcorp.com. And I highly encourage anyone who has an interest in learning more about the company, reach out to me directly. We work for our shareholders. Without shareholders and investors, we are nothing. So highly encourage people, if you have questions, if you have comments, if you just want to be on our mailing list and watch us and follow us, that's great. And that's the best way to get a hold of me.
Great. We'll include those in the show notes accompanying this for easy access. So, Jonathan, wish you well for the remainder of the year. We'll chat beginning part of 2025 and see what progress has been made.
Sounds good. Thank you so much. Be well.
Yeah, no worries. I hope you enjoyed the episode, as always. Obviously, as always, please keep sharing these episodes far and wide. I think gold is at or approaching all-time high and has exceeded all-time high. But I think that's just the start of where gold may go. So appreciate if you can share this to, obviously, share this episode with people in our industry, but also people outside of our industry. Gold is not just for the mining industry. People do collect gold as, obviously, jewelry and collecting physical if that's your thing. So please share this episode far and wide. So until next time, happy mining.
Thank you for listening. Remember to reach out to Rob via the show notes and be sure to subscribe and leave a review. Until next time, happy mining, helping each other to improve the mining industry.